Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. More than 45 million Americans lack health insurance. About 1.2 million Ohioans are uninsured. Both John McCain and Barack Obama have health care proposals they say will help solve the problem. But a Columbus Dispatch special report concludes that when you look closely at the details of both plans, they are expensive and lacking in many ways. They may not be a complete answer for many Ohioans facing non-existent or incomplete health care coverage. We'll find out more with the authors of the Dispatch series on presidential candidates' health care proposals. It began in Sunday's paper on the front page. You see it this morning. It concludes in tomorrow morning's edition. Joining us, back with us, Columbus Dispatch reporters Catherine Kandisky and Alan Johnson. Good to have you both here.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
And we're at 614-292-8513. If you have a comment or question, email to openline at wosu.org. Well, let's talk about the proposals from the two candidates and find out what are the basics. How can we summarize this? So what does John McCain propose, Senator McCain, to help Ohioans who are uninsured? How's he going to make it easier to be insured?
Well, basically, Fred, McCain's plan is primarily a tax credit. They would remove the tax credit that employers now get. For example, my employer gets a tax credit for helping provide insurance to me, and I pay part of it. That tax credit would go away, but I, as an individual, would get a $2,500 tax credit, mm-hmm. for which John McCain wants me to go into the private market and buy my own insurance. So I would use my tax credit plus whatever I'm paying in my normal insurance payments now, combine those by my individual tax policy or health insurance policy. So it's competition. It's a Republican axiom, competition in the marketplace, and that there's a lot more details, but that is essentially the crux of the McCain plan.
Philosophically, competition in the marketplace, right?
Correct. Right.
And briefly, Kathy Kandisky, Senator Obama's got a little different approach, maybe a traditionally Democratic approach.
Right, where McCain would move away from the employer-based healthcare system, Obama would expand on the existing system. He would take the government-run programs, Medicaid, SCHIP for children, he would expand them. He would create a new privately-run program for people without insurance to buy into. So he would build on the existing systems. That's pretty much the difference between their plans.
So if you had through an employer a health care policy you were happy with, you'd keep that, is that right?
That's right.
But that if you didn't, or your employer couldn't afford one, let's say, and didn't have any, you'd have a couple of options, would you, for buying?
You could buy into a government program. You could buy into this new national health care exchange. And if you were a low-income family, you would get a subsidy based on income sliding scale to help you pay for it.
Mm-hmm. And the plan requires all children to be covered, is that right? All children
That's
in
right.
the country?
All children in the country would be covered, and those that aren't covered now would be covered under the SCHIP program, an expansion of the SCHIP program. Parents would be required. Higher income parents would have to secure their own. Mm-hmm. But all children would be insured. And adults, there is no mandate on adults, so it falls a little short. It's not universal coverage, mm-hmm. as was being pushed earlier by Hillary Clinton.
What is the SCHIP program? What is that?
That's the state children's health insurance program. It's a very popular program that insures children, low-income children. Every state has one. They're mostly federally funded. In Ohio, it's children up to 200% of poverty, mm-hmm. qualify.
So this would be expanded to cover every child in the country who was, mm-hmm. not covered by their parents' private health policy or policy through their employer.
Exactly.
Let me ask, Alan, in terms of Senator McCain's proposal, tax credits to help buy coverage, help pay for your premiums, right, monthly?
Presumably. That's one of the questions.
Why do you say presumably?
Well, because the question is, can I buy an insurance policy to cover me at age 57, giving away my age, if I have that $2,500 tax credit and what I'm paying now? I seriously doubt it.
$2,500 for a single person, let's say.
Right. It would be $5,000 if I was a family member.
And we should say this is a tax – $5,000, we should say this is not a tax a deduction. It's actual credit. It's cash.
Correct.
I mean, you have it. Yeah. Okay.
So, and my question is, would I be able to do that? I don't know. Would the family be able to spend $5,000 in their credit plus whatever they pay now and get a policy? Basically, an annual policy for a family now would be $11,000 to $12,000. Mm-hmm. And I am doubtful $5,000 plus that would do it. Both of these plans we found fall short in the amount of money that it will take to fund them.
Both McCain and Obama.
Both of them, mm-hmm. and the accessibility on both of them. They both have good points. I'm not saying they don't, but they both fall short, as we said in the story on Sunday, because they don't get at some of the really, really critical issues in health care.
Primarily. I mean, the issues today with health care are two, simply stated. The number of uninsured or access to the system and soaring costs, which you hear a lot of people talk about the health care system being unsustainable. Simply stated that if it keeps growing, costs keep growing at the rate they're growing now, we're not going to be able to afford health insurance. I think the big problem with both of these plans is they both have different approaches to access, and you can, prefer one over the other. But neither plan does much to get at soaring costs.
Mm-hmm. In other words, the experts you consulted on both plans said, look, the kinds of cost containment measures for the Obama and McCain plans both are pretty routine, and they're not going to contain costs, right?
Right. Both plans talk about preventative care, which a lot of people are, seeing the benefits of preventative care now and how that can save health costs down the road. Both plans talk about electronic medical records to kind of streamline and make access to your medical records easier for different physicians that you might see.
And Obama's puts $50 billion into that.
Billion?
Billion with a B, billion.
But none of these, I mean, they might save costs down the road, but the big interest groups around healthcare, hospitals, physicians, pharmaceutical companies, insurance companies, there's not much that changes anything about the way those mm-hmm. systems operate.
The big criticism of Senator Obama's plan is cost, right?
Right.
Is the cost?
It's estimated by the Tax Policy Center at $1.6 billion.
Mm-hmm. Trillion.
Trillion, sorry.
Trillion.
I'm sorry.
Okay, trillion.
It's all relative.
Big numbers.
Big numbers.
Big numbers.
Sorry. And which is just like, I think the Obama campaign estimated the cost at, what was it, like 50 million?
50 to 65 billion a year.
So what's the difference between the Obama campaign's estimate and the estimate of the Tax Policy Center?
Well, I don't know. We haven't actually run the numbers on it, but I think the Obama people are just making some more conservative estimates on how much it's going to cost mm-hmm. than reality.
And I think they're anticipating greater savings from some of their cost containment proposals.
Than some experts are willing to allow.
Yes.
The right. Obama people estimate that because of their cost savings proposals, overall people will save $2,500 a year just in general. Again, I'm dubious that people are going to save that because there aren't as many things in there to save that much money.
Mm-hmm. Now, getting back to Senator McCain's plan for just a second, a $2,500 tax credit per year for one person to buy coverage. Alan, I think when you spoke to a McCain spokesperson, they said the average premium cost for a single person annually would be $5,000, right? So they're not intending to cover it all. It's a help, but
right. Right. I don't think they are intending to cover it all. They might say that it comes close. But again, I'm very skeptical that you would be – I would be able to get that a family would be able to get that.
I think part of the premise in the McCain plan, I think from the McCain campaign perspective, is that people won't buy more – people will be more choosy with what they spend, whereas right now their employer-based plan may cover a lot. They may go to a plan that they have to pay for – and they may be a little choosier about what they actually need.
Mm-hmm. You could buy a very high deductible, for example, and save money.
Precisely. Yeah. You could save money that way. But the one problem that I heard from a lot of analysts about the McCain plan is there's no provision in the McCain plan to require insurance companies to offer affordable or even offer insurance at all to people with chronic conditions, pre-existing conditions, older people who typically pay more for health insurance. There's no guarantee. So I think the big concern around McCain is, are there going to be gaps that those people mm-hmm. fall into?
Although he does provide, in fairness, McCain plan does have what they call a gap plan, actually, that would presumably cover some of those folks you're talking about with the pre-existing conditions and hard to insure. So he does have a fallback. I believe that's a relatively recent addition to his mm-hmm. plan because apparently they realize there are going to be these folks who don't fit.
Because somebody might have a pre-existing. You talked to one cancer survivor, one woman in your series for The Dispatch, who's, I believe, if I'm correct, she's paying $36,000 a year in health insurance premiums? $36,000?
Absolutely. It didn't run in the paper, but she actually showed us her bill, and it's $6,000 every 2 months.
And is that because she has had cancer? Is that why?
She's because of her age. She's 61, and because she's a cancer survivor and has other health issues. I can't imagine what that woman – how that woman is going to benefit from, frankly, either policy from either candidate at this point. The system is really stacked against her.
Well, I can understand now how she would not benefit much from – in fact, she said she was going to vote for Senator McCain. Did she not?
She said she would hold her nose and vote for McCain.
What did she mean by that, hold her nose?
Well, I don't think she's happy with the McCain either because, as she said – $2,500 credit to her is
– out of $36,000.
Right, $36,000 is a drop in the veritable bucket.
But why didn't she like the Obama plan? Would the Obama plan do more for her?
I believe she didn't like it because she was concerned about the expense. Mm-hmm. And I don't think she probably knew the $1.6 trillion figure. But the hit on Obama has been that it's too expensive. Mm-hmm. And I think that was her main concern. Can we even afford this as a country?
Particular health expert that you consulted, nonpartisan health experts, and one said the dirty little secret is that neither one of these plans, as they stand now, would ever get through Congress. Why not?
I think that's right, and I think it's all the cost. I think it's cost. I think on the it's likely to be a Democratic-controlled Congress for the next president, whoever it is, and even with Obama's plan, I think it's going to be very, very hard for them to go along with this, considering all the other issues facing the country right now, the financial buyouts that are going on right now. I just don't see how they're going to find the money to pay for this. And voters are concerned, I think, about the national deficit. And it's, a lot of Democrats are campaigning on reducing spending this year and reducing that deficit. I think it's going to be really hard to pass. Of course, if you're a Republican president, it gets even harder.
Sure. We have joining us from the Columbus Dispatch this morning, Kathy Kandisky, Alan Johnson, the co-authors of the series now running in the Dispatch, examining the health care proposals of John McCain and Barack Obama. They conclude that when you look at these plans, they're expensive and they're lacking in many ways. And 1.2 million Ohioans are not insured. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. And indeed, if you would like to join us on the web, you can email a comment or question to openline@wosu.org. Both of these plans then leave the existing private health insurance system in effect, right?
Correct.
And there's some suggestion on the part of one of the experts that they're doing this because they're, if you tried to do a Canadian-style plan or a British plan or a French-style plan or Italian-style plan, that this would essentially leave those health insurance companies off to the side, and they would be able, like they can in Britain, to give you a Cadillac policy. In Britain, it's a government policy you get, and if you want a Cadillac policy with extra benefits, you buy it from the health insurer. But that would leave them in that position if that were that kind of plan. But there's a suggestion that neither candidate wants to tempt fate here in terms of what happened with the Clinton plan.
I'm not so sure they want to. It's fate, as they don't want to tempt the powers that be in insurance, in health care, in all of those related industries. Yeah. That's an incredibly powerful lobby. I mean, anywhere there are dollars, there's powerful lobby, and that is an incredibly powerful one.
I think one of the folks we talked to in the story talked about $2.2 trillion of vested interest from special interest groups in health care. And that's very difficult to dismantle.
Mm-hmm. So to be clear then, neither candidate is proposing anything like a single-payer government-run plan, like an expansion of Medicare, for example. Nothing like that.
No.
Mm-hmm. No.
Obama's national health exchange would be privately operated, government-regulated. He would expand private insurance in that way and regulate private insurance companies in that way.
That would be closest to what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be the same as a national health care policy or plan, but it would be closer, far closer than McCain's.
Well, what does that mean, a national health exchange? What is that?
It means that the government would set up regulations about what the coverage has to be, what the payments have to be, how much it costs, and this and that. And private insurance companies would provide the coverage, provide the plans.
So they would say to the private company, say, here's the coverage you have to offer on plan A or plan B or plan C, and here's how much you can charge.
It's got to be equal to, say, Obama talks a lot about making health insurance available through the exchange that is equal to what Congress gets, mm-hmm. which is a lot of bells and whistles. One of the concerns about that is that what critics will say is, well, if you're going to offer very comprehensive coverage like he's suggesting, it's going to cost a lot of money. So how do you make it affordable and comprehensive at the same time?
So the National Health Exchange, if I'm understanding this correctly, is where you can buy insurance if you're not happy with the insurance your employer provides.
Correct.
Or if your employer cannot afford to provide insurance.
Exactly. Now, the thing I'm already hearing the question in my ear almost, regulation, because anytime you set up something like that, you have to have regulation. As Kathy was saying, if they're required to do this, this, and this, and this, you have to have an enforcement mechanism, and that's a whole other area that I'm sure a lot of people will be concerned about, setting up essentially a new or expanded bureaucracy to handle this regulation.
Mm-hmm. At 614-292-8513, Rachel is here. Hi, Rachel.
Hi. My question is, I think maybe goes to the root of the problem. What is the source of the soaring cost of health care? Why is it soaring now, and it wasn't soaring when I was a kid or when my mom was a kid? Does anyone know that? I've never heard anyone talk about it.
I don't know the exact thing about it, but one thing I don't believe we got this in the story that really scared me, I think it's within the next 20 years or so, if it kept going at this rate, there would be no money in the federal budget for anything except health care and Social Security. Every other program gets consumed by that spending. It's so enormous and it's growing so quickly. There would be nothing for education, for defense, for environment.
One of the things in terms of cost that you hear a lot about is that we do a lot of tests. Doctors order a lot of tests. There's concerns about malpractice. Accusations. So physicians tend to be a lot more comprehensive. You also, in terms of costs, hear a lot about money spent at the end of life, that some people question whether we should be spending so much money on, I don't know how to put it gracefully, mm-hmm. but on people toward the ends of their lives, and that those costs keep going up as well.
And the whole Medicare system is in deep financial trouble, I understand, and neither candidate is really saying very much about that.
No.
Rachel, answer your question?
Yes, it did. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. And Kathleen is next. Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Fred. And I wanted to, just by way of disclosure, say that Alan had called the organization I work for, seeking people who might be willing to talk to them, although we were not the source of the family that was portrayed in yesterday's article. I want to thank them for the work they've done on this. But I'm also speaking on behalf of myself and not for any organization at this point. I think the difference in the McCain and the Obama plans is that Obama actually has the intention of ultimately covering all people, and McCain doesn't. I mean, McCain is willing to do some things which I would say is around the edges in terms of providing the tax credits, the money that is saved from not having a tax deduction anymore by employers, giving families about $5,000. And I think one of your guests already talked about the fact that that really doesn't buy a comprehensive family policy on the market. In fact, it probably doesn't even go halfway toward purchasing it. But Obama's plan really does have the intention of covering all Americans, and that is critical to me. I know there's cost problems and that we have to come to terms with rising costs. One of the things that I think Obama did that in some ways was during the primary that was probably better than what Hillary did is that he made it clear that he would look toward creating a consensus around these things rather than have a very specific plan. You know, we're not electing a policy wonk, we're electing a president, and I think that is the one thing that he's made clear is that he will, you know, bring together some of the best folks, and we will have to deal with costs. But I don't think we'll ever, if we say that first we have to get costs under control before we try to expand access, we'll never do it. We have to expand access.
Kathleen, what is your organization, by the way?
I work for UCAN Ohio.
And you advocate a single payer plan?
No, we don't. We advocate that there be a strong public-private partnership. That we need to build on the system that we have. We have been working, through our coalition, the Ohio Consumers for Health Coverage, we have been working very carefully to look at certain building blocks for health coverage in Ohio.
But you advocate coverage for all Americans, do you?
Yes, all of, okay. Well, and we focus on all Ohioans because we're an Ohio-based organization.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, let me ask our dispatch reporters, do you feel that Kathleen's presentment in terms of these two plans is accurate?
Yeah, I think definitely that that Obama has clearly stated his intent is to cover as many people as possible. And I think she also raises a good point about details of these plans and the lack of details in maybe these plans. And I think that's intentional because I had one analyst tell me that they learned in Washington, they learned a little something about the Hillary Clinton proposal in, I don't remember the year it was exactly, but how that kind of fell on its face because the president himself offered this 800-page, highly detailed proposal on what to do. Mm-hmm. These candidates, both of them, clearly are trying to give their perspective a brushstroke of what direction they would head. And the actual, you know, fine details aren't in these plans at this point. Those are things that would have to be developed. And voters ultimately are really going to have to decide what philosophy they come down on. Do they believe in insuring everyone? Do they believe on expanding on the current system? Or do they believe in moving people off into the private marketplace and letting those private forces lower cost, improve access, things like that.
So those competitive forces. In the
competitive
private,
forces,
and that is Senator
yeah.
McCain's philosophy, the latter, right?
Yes.
And the former Senator Obama's philosophy. So we've got two very different philosophies of how to deal with all this.
Very different.
Okay, Kathleen, thanks for your call today. And let us go to Stephen. Hello, Stephen. You're on the air.
I was a practicing physician, and prior to being forced into accepting assignment for Medicare, I had enough income that when I had patients who couldn't afford to pay, it wasn't really all that big a problem. But today, you have a situation where malpractice is out of control. People who are in practice end up covering their butts by providing services that are way beyond what patients really need. Until we get control of this, cost of medical care will never come down.
Hmm.
We have a number of different systems that seem to work reasonably well. Medicare is one. Workers' compensation is another. And they seem to be able to collect enough money to cover the medical expenses that are incurred.
Well, my understanding is, Alan and Kathy, correct me if I'm wrong, and hang on just a second, Stephen, that my understanding is the Medicare system is in great financial trouble, and unless something is done, it's going to be in even more serious trouble very quickly.
The other question I had is I thought that the physicians didn't particularly care for Medicaid rates because they were lower than cost. I mean, I've heard that from people before. Do you find that to be true?
Medicaid pays practically nothing. Earlier in my practice, there was enough income based on what people could pay on their own that mm-hmm. it wasn't all that serious a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But being forced to accept assignment on practically everything basically cut physicians' incomes in half. Medicare is run by private insurance companies. Nationwide Insurance in Ohio is the company that deals with Ohio Medicare. And then there's a whole bunch of other Medicare companies that are run by other private insurance mm-hmm. companies. Until we have a single payer, I don't think this will ever be under control.
Stephen, thanks so much for your comments today. We're going to take a break here with our panel from the Columbus Dispatch, Alan Johnson, Catherine Tandiski, who are co-authors of the articles on the presidential candidates' health care plans now appearing in the Dispatch. Back after these messages and with you callers as well at WOSU 820 NPR News.
Thomas Jefferson likely conceived 7 children with his slave, Sally Hemings, and though his story is in need of retelling, first, it's the Hemings' turn. I'm Neil Conan. Annette Gordon Reed's new book on the untold story of the Hemings family, The Hemings of Monticello. Plus, Randall Kennedy continues our series with This American Moment. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins later this afternoon. It starts at 2 o'clock, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning. I'm Amy Jurevich. Thanks for joining us for Open Line this morning. With your donation of $75 or more, all new and renewing members will receive the WOSU member card. The member card has 2-for-1 dining discounts at more than 100 restaurants throughout Central Ohio. Discounts are also available for bed and breakfasts, online merchants, performances, and other attractions. Get the most for your membership with the WOSU member card. Find out more about becoming a member online at WOSU.org. And in the weather forecast for today, sunny skies and a high of 82 today. Clear tonight with a low around 50. Currently 65 degrees in downtown Columbus.
Support for WOSU comes from the Columbus Metropolitan Club, where everyone is welcome to be a part of the live discussion at weekly luncheons. More information at www.columbusmetroclub.org.
Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. We're talking about the health care proposals from both Senator John McCain and Senator Barack Obama, our major party presidential candidates. There's a Columbus Dispatch series that began Sunday and concludes tomorrow, actually, on the front page of the paper, evaluating these plans. And the report concludes that they are both expensive in lacking and lacking in many ways. We've got the authors here of the series, Columbus Dispatch reporters Alan Johnson and Catherine Kandisky. Your questions at 614-292-8513. Right now, temporarily, our emails are disabled, so we can't find an email from you right now, so I'll let you know when that comes back into service. But phone calls, yeah, absolutely. We've got a phone line available for you. Bill's on the air. Hi, Bill.
Well, good morning, Fred and guests. Thank you for having the series of articles on this subject, because now you're focusing in on issues, and that's great.
Sure.
I have a couple. I called to see what your guests thought about Ralph Nader's his approach, which I thought was close to single payer. But couple prior questions. This thing, which is in the Dispatch, I believe is considered news as opposed to editorials. Am I correct on that?
Correct. That's correct.
Secondly, if the paper writes an editorial, I don't have any problem with that being biased, but I didn't see any discussion or hear any, that's why I called in, about discussing Ralph Nader's program, because he'll be a candidate in Ohio. So the question is, who decides what is news in terms of objective coverage of these things versus what's an editorial? Because I think that spilling over here, we should have all of the candidates who are viable candidates as part of the series, shouldn't we?
Oh, yeah, Bob Barr, the Libertarian Party candidate. There'll be other candidates as well mm-hmm. on the ballot, right?
Well, Bill, I will acknowledge ignorance about Ralph Nader's proposal and any of the other candidates, because we did just focus on the two primary ones. And the argument in this is, with many other issues on this, is it would be nice if we could, if we had the time and the space, but there are only one of these two people only is going to be elected president. And as unfair as that is to only focus on them, that's the editorial decision we have to make. So that's why we only do those two, as opposed to Barr and Nader and any of the others. I know that's not the answer you probably wanted to hear, but that's the honest one.
Oh, no, that is an honest one. You said that's an editorial decision. It's not a news decision, because it would be pretty much, perhaps have less of each. But going on again, you're basically saying, by the mindset of people who run some newspapers, it's the corporation shall decide who will be a candidate, not our appointed legislators. And that does bother me. And you're right, it's the answer I didn't want to hear, but you're honest and you get A for that.
Well, thank you.
Okay, Bill, thanks for your call. I guess what you're saying, Alan, is that you have a certain amount of resources and staff time and reporter
Correct.
Time to devote to this, and you've got to make some choices.
Correct.
And that's the choice you made. Okay. And let us go to Suzanne. Hi, Suzanne. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. I just have a comment. First of all, I'm not for a national health care system. Second is, if there is regulation, it should be aimed at the pharmaceuticals and the insurance companies, if you want to regulate anything at all. But I work in health care, and I spend a lot of my day fighting these regulations, looking at them, trying to live by them. And for Medicare, for example, you now have a third layer of bureaucracy, because now Medicare is out to recover money from all the hospitals because they say they have overpaid. So now we have fiscal intermediaries to put up with. Now we have the recovery audits to put up with. And I'm telling you, it's not hospitals so much as it is the pharmaceuticals, the insurance companies themselves, and basically people that put out like General Electric, their big MRIs and CAT scans, mm-hmm. and costing
Suzanne,
a fortune. Therefore,
when you look at what you've heard of the McCain and Obama plans, which plan do you prefer?
Like I said, I'm not for a national health care plan, but I'm basically, I guess I would have to say McCain only for the reason I feel it's a free market. But mm-hmm. I do believe that there has to be regulation on the insurance companies. I do believe that very much so. And one more thing I just want to say about Medicare. They're just taking money out of one hand and putting it in another. They're reducing the payments to hospitals for certain services, and they're increasing them for other things. And as money's just circulating, there's no extra money. There's no more money. It just goes around in a circle. And all you have to do is just look at the regs, and you'll see that.
Suzanne, thanks for your comments. And let us go on here to Mike. Hello, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And thanks for having this program, too. I just wanted to ask your guests, have you heard if either candidate or really anyone that's talking about this has looked at the problem of the lack of primary care physicians? I just recently read an article in AARP that I think the number of students turning out of college that were going into primary care had dropped like close to 50% since 1997. And, you know, with so many people retiring and everything.
Yeah. Let's get it. Hang on the line, Mike.
They did. You know, the president of the Ohio State Medical Association that I spoke to raised that issue with me and said that more people going into medicine tend to go into specialized fields now, and that there's a real shortage of primary care physicians, and that the Obama plan in particular may need to address that issue by, you know, ensuring all these more people, and they're going to need more primary physicians. But the reason for, and this is what I'm not as clear about, is the reason that there's fewer primary care physicians is that perhaps that the salaries are not, I don't know if I'm stating this right, there's not as much money to be made in primary care. People are going into specialized medicine. I don't know if you're still on the line and can answer that for us, but I have heard that that's an issue, and that it's going to be a big problem down the line with either of these plans.
Mm-hmm. Mike, a follow-up question here?
Yeah, what you said was exactly right. That was the thrust of the article, that it was the salaries that were driving it. And, you know, it would seem like somehow there has to be some kind of incentive for people to go into the primary care, because they said that primary care doctors, they have to work a lot more hours, and the only way they can make more money is to see more patients every day.
Yeah.
Whereas specialists, you know, they're actually taken care of more by the health care.
And I think
system.
The other thing, I think you're seeing a lot of primary care physicians, those that are working primary care, going into not working on their own anymore, but joining health groups, joining hospital groups and such, mm-hmm. just so they can be part of that.
Mike, thanks for your call. Now,
good point.
We say that more than 45 million Americans lack health insurance, right? According to the experts you consulted, which plan covers more or potentially would cover more of that 45 million, Obama's or McCain's, and what are the numbers?
I'm pretty sure it's
Obama's
Obama
with,
by
yeah.
far, because that is essentially the thrust of the plan, cover more people. I think that the McCain plan would potentially cover more people, but I have not seen any statistics that say it's anywhere near the total number that Obama's recovered.
I have seen statistics on how many more – how the numbers of uninsured would go down, projections on that under the Obama plan, and it's significant. It's by more than half.
But your expert said, on the other hand, that the Obama plan, if he's going to cover that many people, there may not be sufficient primary care physicians, and we've got another problem.
That is a problem, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get back to you. Callers, Harold is next. Hi, Harold.
Yes, I think that we need, when you work for a company, the group of employees go together, and the employer therefore gets a better policy at a lower rate for each individual. and they don't try to, and usually it's, they accept you on current conditions, no exceptions.
Yeah. And therefore what?
And I don't think that an individual like myself or anything, we can't afford the other thing because they want to go real sky high on everything.
You mean at an individual policy?
Right.
I mean, you definitely get a better deal under a plan, as part of a group plan than you would as an individual. I don't think there's any question about that.
Sure.
One thing the McCain plan suggests would happen is there wouldn't, even if you left that employer, you might be able to go in with your church organization or your union or some other social or some group that would get a group insurance plan and thus get a better rate. So there would be there again, it's fallen in the private market. You might group together, aggregate together and get a better rate than you could individually.
Mm-hmm. But Carolyn, you make a good point. Thanks for calling. Do we have any idea what are typical health insurance premium costs on a yearly basis for a single person? For a family, what's usual?
I know for a family under a employer based policy, usually runs $12,000 to $14,000 a year
with an employer based policy.
Mm-hmm.
If
with
they were trying to purchase that on their own, it would be
more,
a great deal more.
Yeah.
And according to the McCain a spokesperson, I think Helen that you talked to, he said average premium cost for a single person annually would be $5,000. Is that right?
That's what they said.
Yeah, and of course it depends. I guess you can save by raising your deductible. You can have a $5,000 deductible and essentially self-insure for the first $5,000, right? And maybe get a lower premium.
Right. Again, it's that, and I don't know about you, and I'm sure some of your listeners would know how to do it, but I wouldn't know how to do this. I wouldn't know how to shop for all of these things in healthcare. I really wouldn't.
Well, it would create a new cottage industry of medical insurance consultants that would help you find the best policy for you.
You bet. Perry's on the line. Hello, Perry.
Hello. Thank you. I've been in the insurance and employee benefits business for 40 years, and primarily with emphasis on retirement plans, and my knowledge base is in Social Security, and I've had a lot of clients in the large and small businesses. And 20 years ago, I was attempting to sell a small group package to employers with under 50 employees. The common objection that I encountered was, first of all, it's too high. At that time, it was $5,000 a year. That was 20 years ago. Now it's at $10,000 or $12,000 a year. And they said that my employees, and these are people who have dry cleaners with 20 or 30 employees, grocery stores and so forth, my employees go to the emergency room. They won't even pay $100 a month, let alone $500 or $600 or $700 a month out of their paycheck. They don't make that much. They only made $1,000 a month at that time. And he said that there was no point in trying to have an insurance program. I can't afford an extra 50% of their monthly pay for health insurance. So it was an insurmountable market. It was a situation, it still is, where the incidental cost for the small employer of providing insurance, and these 45 million people who are uninsured, a large number of them are single. They are young people. They are working at all kinds of jobs other than the major employers. And it is an almost unsolvable problem, except for on a national insurance basis. Now, there's a very good little book that only has 250 pages. It's called The Healthcare Fix. I'm in my car, and I don't have the name of the author, but you can Google it. It's a two-hour read. And you can find all of the facts, the exact facts on costs, bodies, coverage. And their solution is that we have to have a national insurance package that will cover everyone, not a national health care package. They do not want to nationalize. There is no sense in nationalizing health care itself. But the problem is one that is more complex and more expensive than either candidate is willing to admit.
Okay, Perry, thanks for your concerns and your comments. I appreciate your call today. We call it here from Trudy. Hello, Trudy.
Hi. I just have a brief comment. I just recently bought health insurance for my he's 25, my son. He's healthy, has pre-existing conditions, which they didn't exclude, and his insurance for a whole year is $1,009.
Uh-huh.
That seems pretty affordable.
I was surprised. That was by just getting online and going to Blue Cross Blue Shield and Medical Mutual and just picking the best policy. That did have, I think it's $1,000 deductible, but it's not practical for him to be going to the doctor all the time. But if he would have an accident or something like that, he would be taken care of.
So when he is covered, then past the $1,000 deductible, what? How much is covered? 80% or 100%?
100%.
So you find that a pretty comprehensive, relatively comprehensive and affordable policy?
I thought so, and I've done it for 2 years in a row. The amazing thing to me is that he does have pre-existing conditions, which I disclosed, and they didn't even mention them when I got the policy. He's not overweight, and he's I think they look at the weight, and he doesn't smoke or drink. So I think that's probably the three things they look at: weight and whether you smoke.
You know, she raises a good point about those kind of lifestyle choices. There's a lot of debate now about whether people should be asked to pay more for their health insurance because of the lifestyle choices they make. Do you drink or do you smoke? I don't think drinking's on there yet. Do you smoke? Are you overweight? Those types of questions. And those are interesting questions that we'll have to wrestle with. Some companies are doing it already.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that if you we're small business owners, and we pay way more for our employees than I pay for my son.
Interesting. Trudy, thanks so much for that piece of information.
I just wanted to mention one other thing. Our other son is a student at a university student, and we pay for his pretty much identical insurance, and that's also Blue Cross Blue Shield. We pay $1,600 through the university, so I'm not sure why, but anyways, that's what we do.
Okay, Trudy, appreciate your call. We have our emails back up, so you can email us at openline@wosu.org. One emailer says, is it true that John McCain's plan would tax as ordinary income the amount that employers contribute to an individual's insurance, in effect, a tax increase?
Correct.
Yes, it would. Yep. In other words, the benefit, financial benefit I get from my employer paying it would be considered income, and it would be taxed.
Mm-hmm. So some critics feel this would discourage then employers from offering.
Right. That it would. Clearly the idea of McCain is to push people into the private market.
Mm-hmm.
And most people agree that the effect of McCain's plan will be, to some extent, fewer employers offering health insurance to their
mm-hmm.
employees.
And this is a philosophical decision on the part of Senator McCain, a philosophical orientation, we could say.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. Email from Jackie. What portion of health care cost is the cost of insurance administration and profit? She says, based on my recent experience, I'd guess very high, maybe 50%. She goes on to say eliminating that would make health care costs much more affordable.
I've seen some statistics saying that I don't know if it's 50%, but I believe it's 25 or more, that there is a very big write-up, so to speak, for administration of insurance policies. You can argue it may be more than that, but it's substantial.
Mm-hmm. Jackie also makes a comment critical of the McCain plan. She says, I'd like to make the comment that the McCain plan allows market forces to keep costs down. We've recently seen how well that works. That's from our emailer, Jackie. Mary's on the line. Hello, Mary.
I have 2 points. I have been on a school teacher's salary in buying stock, small amounts of stock, for about 40 years, and I've used about 5 different brokers since I've moved different places. Every single broker has, I've noticed, always wanted me to buy pharmaceutical stocks and insurance stocks, and lately a couple wanted me to get into hospital corporations. When you were asked about why the cost of medical care is increasing, I don't think you gave quite enough credit to the fact that these are still considered the profit-making businesses that they are. I have refused to buy these stocks, but they are the ones that get the best return, says the stockbroker.
Okay.
The other point I want to make, I have read, and I'm not just asking more about this, that one, the just in possibly high cost for what the doctors pay for insurance. What is it called now?
Malpractice,
thank you. The malpractice insurance rates just are unbelievably high. Part of that is that they do a very poor job of disciplining inexpert practitioners, that the medical schools are not putting out the students and watching them that they should be, and the practice itself does not, and the hospital boards that examine the problems in hospitals go very, very easy, or in some states, there's just no discipline at all.
Mary, got to move on. Thank you for your comments. Appreciate your calling today. We have Dave on the air. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a couple questions. And the first is, we always hear this alarming number, 43 million uninsured in the country. And I was wondering if there are any true stats as far as how many of those, or what percentage of those 43 million choose not to accept any type of coverage, because I know when I was a younger man from the ages of probably 22 after college, dropping off my parents' plan, I probably was 27 before I actually selected an insurance plan.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I know you're right about that. I don't have any stats handy on it. That would be very interesting, because I totally agree, and I think that. A recent healthcare panel I sat in on, some of the younger folks on that panel, that's exactly what they had to say. They didn't, you know, they're young, they're healthy, nothing's happening to them. They, you know, if they're in low-income jobs in particular, paying, as one of the previous callers said, paying out of pocket for healthcare just seems like a waste of money for them. So I think you're absolutely right about that, but I regrettably don't have any stats to share.
No, I don't have any numbers on that as far as people who choose not to, but there are some alarming ones about who is uninsured. This was from a Census Bureau recently, and it was one out of every three Hispanics do not have insurance, and that the numbers are very different for the whites and minorities, but one out of three. I mean, that's pretty significant for a very large population in our country to be uninsured.
Dave, you have a second question?
Yes, I wanted to. Somebody had made a comment in reference to paying taxes on the benefit of an employer health care plan, and I was just going to make a comment first before asking my question, is that typically when you're hired into a company, all of your benefits, whether it's your vacation days, your sick days, or your health care plan, is all basically created to a total a certain amount, and that is your compensation package. So I don't see where McCain's program with taxing people for that compensation is a problem. My question would go to, though, on the other side of that, with the Obama plan, although you may not be taxed individually, what dollar amount is going to be passed off to the actual taxpayer to cover his health care plan?
Mm-hmm. Well, good point. And clearly the Obama plan is the more expensive plan dollar and cent wise. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I think your comment is, if you translate that higher cost overall to what you're going to pay as an individual in a number of different ways, the cost of government, you're absolutely correct.
Correct in the sense that what people are going to pay more. What?
Right. I mean, it's the pay me now or pay me later. I might not pay more for my insurance now, but the cost of government has to go up if you're having an expansion of government provided insurance, mm-hmm. as the Obama plan.
Although in terms of income tax, Senator Obama says he will raise taxes on those family incomes over $250,000, but will keep the same, or I believe he even says maybe cut taxes for those under $250,000. So.
Right. But how is it possible to do that?
Well,
that's the big question. that's the question. Evidently, it's possible, according to both these candidates' plans are possible. But I think what our series tried to point out was that the critics or the analysts, not even critics necessarily, because everyone we spoke to for the story saw good points in both plans and raised, you know, the approaches as great. The problem was the cost. How are you going to pay for it? And they underestimate it. They don't account for it. And the savings isn't there to sustain either of these.
Dave, thanks for your question. We have an email from John who says, amazing. Asked to explain why medical expenditures are going up and up, these experts on your panel did not mention insurance company costs. You have a layer of private bureaucracy that makes billions by making sure sick people don't get any treatment, says John, and your panel seems unaware or unwilling to place the blame where it's appropriate. Do you wonder why other countries cover most of their citizens at a much lower cost? They don't have an insurance industry making tons of profits while offering nothing at all. Your comments, Kathy and Alan.
I would agree. I mean, I don't think we meant to leave any interest group out.
There's enough blame to go around for everybody. And if we did, as Kathy says, if we did leave them out, we shouldn't have, because insurance is equally culpable for the cost increases of the other sectors.
All right. Jill is next. Hello, Jill.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm calling to find out about the tax credits and how they're administered. Say a family of four would only have an income of $25,000 a year, so they really wouldn't be paying taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Or they wouldn't have a tax bill.
They wouldn't have a tax bill that would equal the $5,000 credit that Senator
right.
McCain is going to give. Yeah.
So how does that work? Does the government write a check? What happens?
I don't know what happens. I haven't seen anything that addresses that. That's a good point.
Hmm. So presumably, as our caller says, if your family of four making $25,000, you may pay little or no tax.
Yes.
Senator McCain says, I'm going to give you a $5,000 tax credit.
Right.
That would seem to imply then that the government is going to write a check.
It would, yeah. That's what I would expect, but I don't know that.
I've never seen it written, though.
No, that's a good point.
We don't know the answer to that one, I'm afraid.
Well, you can find out and put it in the
good idea.
We will. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Jill. By the way, do you have a mechanism in the dispatch to deal with something? Now, here's a good question from – I think this is an excellent question from Jill. And the series, of course, concludes tomorrow with a look at the Obama plan, and you looked at McCain's plan this morning. Do you have a mechanism for answering a question like that in the dispatch? Is there a way to do it?
Well, both our emails are at the end of the story, ajohnson@dispatch.com and ckandiske@dispatch.com, and we're happy to field questions and answer them to best of our ability, which sometimes isn't all that great, but we try.
Ellen, and you're the McCain expert here, right? So,
well, so to speak, yes.
So you'd be the one to ask this question.
Right. I will ask that question, and I don't have an answer. I mean, I'm not sure, unless it's one of the, as they would say in Congress, an earmark. Maybe it's money that you can only use for that purpose for insurance. It isn't like, here's your $5,000 check, go spend it whatever you want.
Well, no, but what she's asking is, if I don't pay $5,000 in taxes, how can I get a $5,000 tax credit?
Good point.
Yeah.
And
we don't know the answer to that. We talk about the cost of the Obama plan and of the McCain plan. What, in fact, is their cost over what period of time? Again, let's repeat that. $1.6 trillion, is that right?
$1.6 trillion for Obama and $1.3 trillion for McCain.
Over a period of?
Is that
10 years? Or?
I think it is 10 years.
I believe it is over a 10-year period. Because the Obama people say theirs would cost $50 to $65 billion a year.
Yeah.
So you multiply that out times 10 years, and it's still not $1.6 trillion, but you're in a little more closer in the ballpark.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, although the Obama plan has been criticized for its cost, the McCain plan is also very costly. There's not a huge difference, is there?
No. And again, we didn't do our own analysis on this. We took the Center for Tax Policy's analysis on it. But yes, there's got to be a cost of the tax credits that he's talking about giving on so many people across the board. Fred, one other thing I just wanted to mention is we were talking earlier about the sickest folks. 10% of our population accounts for 64% of the dollars. So that, and most of those are older folks. So we're talking about older folks in our country, and it costs $2 out of every $3 to go for their health care. There's a dilemma, but what we do about it, I don't think anybody knows.
Because the suggestion is you might begin to ration health care. And if somebody's, you know, 85 years old and they need an operation that could be life-saving but is unlikely to produce that life-saving outcome, the question is, do you do the operation? Now you would in the United States.
It's a very difficult question. I mean, and the numbers don't lie. That's where the money goes. $2 out of every $3 goes to that kind of situation you just referred to. But what do you do about it? You just say, Grandpa, sorry, we're not going to have your surgery.
So your conclusion for both the plans, when you consulted independent, nonpartisan experts, both the McCain and the Obama plan, they're expensive and they're lacking in many ways. That's the conclusion of the series.
That's the conclusion.
I believe so. I don't believe either of them will work in any way as they suggest.
So you can see the series. In fact, the installment on the McCain plan is in this morning's paper, tomorrow morning's paper, the installment on the Obama plan. And thank you, Ellen Johnson, Catherine Kandiske. Thanks for being with us this hour.
Our pleasure.
Talking about the major party presidential candidates' health plans. When we come back, a comedian and political satirist, Andy Borowitz, was a finalist in a couple of years for the Thurber Prize for American Humor. He's the creator of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air television series, and you read his Borowitz report in the Columbus Dispatch. And we'll be here with some a comic take on the campaigns coming up and the election on listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820, NPR News.